drawing condemnations from the Muslim world. Hello, everybody, and thanks for tuning in to World News. Thousands of ethnic Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh are streaming into Armenia following Azerbaijan's lightning offensive last week that caused the full surrender of separatists there. Thousands of refugees have already crossed into Armenia. Separatist fighters in long-disputed region were forced into a ceasefire following a day-long military operation that claimed some 200 lives. Azeri President Ilham Aliyev has held talks with his Turkish counterpart, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, to address the situation in Karabakh. Meantime, thousands of people have thronged the streets of the Armenian capital, Yerevan, in a series of protests over the government's handling of the Karabakh crisis. The Nagorno-Karabakh region is internationally recognized as part of Azerbaijan, but predominantly populated by ethnic Armenians. The leadership of the breakaway region says they will leave for Armenia for fear of ethnic cleansing. Russia says it shot down four Ukrainian drones over the northwestern part of the Black Sea and Crimean Peninsula. Russia's defense ministry says four other drones were also destroyed overnight in southwestern regions of Kursk and Belgorod. No information on possible damage or casualties as of yet, but this is the latest in a series of Ukrainian drone strikes on Russian positions. Meanwhile, Ukraine's southern port city of Odessa was hit by Russian missiles overnight. Attack destroyed some grain storage. Ukraine's Air Force says it intercepted 19 cruise missiles and drones during the attack. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has announced the arrival of the first batch of U.S.-made Abrams tanks in Kiev. Zelensky did not mention the number of tanks or the time they'll be joining the brigades in the front line. According to U.S. officials, tanks are armed with 120-millimeter rounds of depleted uranium, strong enough to pierce conventional tank armor. Deployment comes less than a week after U.S. President Joe Biden announced plans for the delivery in a meeting with the Ukrainian president. This is part of a $43 billion security assistance package promised by Washington. Other Western countries already supply Kiev with advanced weapons. Moscow has constantly warned that West's arms deliveries to Kiev will only prolong the war. The Iranian president has categorically rejected accusations the country's move to enrich uranium at 60% purity was aimed at building an atomic bomb. In an interview with CNN, Ebrahim Raisi said Tehran ramped up enrichment only after European countries trampled upon their commitments under the 2015 nuclear deal. He said the European signatories return to the deal and fulfill obligations at any time, then Iran will undoubtedly comply with its commitments as it has done so in the past. Elsewhere in his interview, the president said U.S. mediated efforts to normalize Israel's relations with some Persian Gulf Arab states, including Saudi Arabia, will fail. And it comes as Riyadh has reportedly informed Washington of its decision to suspend all negotiations on normalizing ties with Israel. It's the second day of the Asian Games in the Chinese city of Hangzhou. More than 12,000 athletes from 45 nations, including Iran, are competing in these games. Team Iran has grabbed already four medals to stand 11th in the game so far. Our correspondent Salman Khujuri joined us earlier with details on the medals that Iran has bagged on the second day of the games.
I should say that in men's individual saber fencing, Mohammad Rafai won a bronze medal. And also Nemadzadeh, Mina Nemadzadeh in Taekwondo, because she had made way into the semifinal, she was defeated against her opponent, but she grabbed a bronze medal for the Iranian caravan. Also in Taekwondo, minus 58-kilogram division of Taekwondo, Mahdi Haji Musai won silver medal again. And that's good news again. We have Iranian women's cockle rowing also won a Roland medal of the 19th Asian Games. If we want to take a closer look at the standings of Iranian athletes so far on the second day of the 19th Asian Games, I should say that by having two bronze medals and two silver medals so far on the second day of the 19th Asian Games, Iran's ranking and standing so far is 11th among other countries. But definitely, this such a ranking will change in favor of Iran as more and more gold-winning categories and disciplines and categories will begin in coming days. And history and experience has shown that Iran will definitely have a couple of more gold and colorful medals for Iran. And definitely we wait for gold medals to be grappled on F, especially for wrestling, especially for weightlifting and also judo and some other disciplines. So we are waiting for more colorful medals to be grabbed by Iranian athletes so far.
Now, South Korea and the U.S. have kicked off joint war games in waters east of the Korean Peninsula amid simmering tensions with Pyongyang. The South Korean Navy says the three-day exercises involve 9 vessels and 2 patrol aircraft from the two sides. They will focus on anti-submarine warfare and live-fire drills. Spokesman for the drill says exercises will serve to effectively deter and respond to nuclear and missile threats from the Democratic Republic of Korea. The DPRK says the military moves are defensive. Its military moves, that is, are defensive and has condemned the joint war games as rehearsals for invasion. Israeli settlers backed by regime forces have once again stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, desecrating the holy site. Almost daily incursions have drawn condemnations from the Muslim world, and that was a topic with our guests earlier in our news review program. Here it is.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. Hundreds of settlers, backed by the Israeli military, stormed Al-Aqsa Mosque, drawing condemnation from Muslim countries. The settlers toured the compound and performed rituals there, which are considered sacrilegious to the site. Saudi Arabia and Egypt have separately condemned the move, describing it as a provocative act. Saudi Arabia's foreign ministry said Riyadh firmly stands by the Palestinian people and supports all efforts to end the occupation. Egypt also called on influential international parties to fulfill their responsibility to protect Palestinian holy sites and the legitimate rights. Under decades-long agreements signed by Israel, non-Muslim worship at the Al-Aqsa Mosque is prohibited. The site, however, has seen almost daily incursions by Israeli settlers in recent weeks. Jamal Juma is a founder and coordinator at Stop the Wall Campaign, who joins us from occupied Ramallah. And also, Mukhaibar Abu Sada joins us. He's a professor of political science at Al-Azhar University, joining us from Gaza City. Welcome to you both. Jamal Juma, we know that this act happens on a frequent basis, but I believe that the frequency has been ramped up quite a bit. Are we looking at what are the goals that you think that this extreme cabinet has when it throws its weight behind the settlers, especially with its extreme minister Itamar Ben-Gvir, who has also desecrated and went on this trip to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, supported by Israeli security forces? They want to Judaize basically Al-Quds, and they want this to become a norm?
Yes, of course. We are witnessing since years now this systematic escalations of attacks on Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa. And that's clearly come into a plan to take over Al-Aqsa Mosque, because they consider Al-Aqsa is one of the most important areas. They want to control total Jerusalem. And in the process of Judaization of Jerusalem, since they announced in 2002 about the greatest Jewish Jerusalem that takes 10% of the West Bank, the focus became on Al-Aqsa Mosque because it's the heart of this plan of Judaization of Al-Aqsa Mosque and Jerusalem in general. And nowadays, with this fascist government now led by Smotrich and Netanyahu, what they are trying is to accelerate and to finalize this. Means that by all this very violent invasions that has been participated by all these officials, ministers, they want to make it like a de facto, the annexation, the dividing of Al-Aqsa Mosque, controlling who can get in or out, decreasing the number of the Palestinians and Muslims who can go to Al-Aqsa, and controlling who can go and who cannot. We were controlling outside what's so-called Jerusalem, well, in the Palestinians in West Bank and Gaza, but now there are small restrictions even on Jerusalemites, on the people or Palestinian Muslims from 48 who's coming. So that's what they want. They want to have a total control on this place. Total control means total occupying, total sovereignty on the whole area, against the whole what we have been historically known from the Jordanians responsible over Al-Aqsa Mosque. So they consider their sovereignty there a sovereignty on Jerusalem. Without it, no full sovereignty on Jerusalem.
It was more than a month ago, I believe, but it was very recent, Mukhaibar Abu Sada. I don't know if you recall that there was a plan that was given by one of these extreme ministers of Israel to divide the Al-Aqsa Mosque. I'm basically looking at an excerpt of what divisions they had promoted. They wanted to give the southern part of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound to the Muslims, but the settlers would be getting the central and the northern parts, which would include the Dome of the Rock. And, of course, Palestinians were outraged at that point. Along with that, they also made an announcement saying that they wanted to end Jordan's guardianship at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Tell us whether this plan is something that they want to enact at some point, and they are testing the grounds by the incursions that are being made right now.
This is the ultimate goal of the Israeli authorities, to divide Al-Aqsa Mosque, especially between Muslims and Jews. And if you look at the number of Israelis who storm Al-Aqsa Mosque on a daily basis, that leads to this conclusion. And let me tell you that up until this moment, today, more than 350 Israeli settlers and Israelis have stormed Al-Aqsa Mosque since the early hours of this morning. And many of these Israelis are performing rituals and Jewish prayers inside Al-Aqsa compound, which is in total contradiction of the status quo of Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is designated only for Muslim prayers. And Jews can only visit Al-Aqsa Mosque just like any other foreigners, but Israeli Jews do not respect their commitments and the status quo of the Al-Aqsa compound. It's true that many Israeli extremists are basically pushing the government and pushing the Israeli authorities to divide Al-Aqsa Mosque, especially like the same case which would happen with the home of the patriarch, the Al-Haram al-Ibrahimi, or the Mosque of Ibrahim, which had been divided between Jews and Muslims. And there are many days even Muslims and Palestinians are not allowed even to pray inside Al-Haram al-Ibrahimi. And therefore, it seems to me that this is the beginning of the division of Al-Aqsa compound between Jews and Muslims.
Thank you for that. Mukhaibar Abbasada, professor of political science at Al-Azhar University. Jamal Jumma, thank you so much. Founder and coordinator at Stop the Wall Campaign on Occupied Ramallah. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review.
As Jews around the world celebrate Yom Kippur, or Day of Atonement, the Israeli regime seizes the opportunity to further tighten restrictions on Palestinians, especially in the besieged Gaza Strip. Tel Aviv has for years been punishing Palestinians by shutting down its crossings with Gaza and the occupied West Bank on Jewish holidays, allegedly for security reasons. Ashraf Shannon has your details out of Gaza.
Israel has resealed its crossings with Gaza for the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur, or Day of Atonement. There is pedestrian crossing in northern Gaza, and the Kerem Shalom commercial crossing in southern Gaza will remain shut until Tuesday. The closure of the crossings will only increase the suffering of more than 2 million Gazans who have been under a crippling blockade since 2007. The impoverished coastal sliver already suffers from high poverty and unemployment rates. Experts say that sealing the crossings during Jewish holidays will further complicate the situation and is part of Israel's racist policies against the Palestinians. Every year, the apartheid Israeli regime seals the crossings with Gaza for an average of 100 days for Jewish holidays and other occasions, while keeping its crossings with Egypt and Jordan open on the same occasions.
Israel has systematically closed the border crossings between Gaza and Israel, Erez and Kerem Shalom, which has inflicted more hardship and more burdens on the Gaza community. In the beginning of the Jewish holiday, that they close the border crossings with the Gaza Strip mainly, and they keep it open with other areas, like they keep their border crossing open with Egypt, with Jordan.
Experts believe that only the complete lifting of the inhumane Israeli siege and the permanent reopening of all crossings can end the deteriorating humanitarian situation in the tiny coastal territory.
Israel is suffocating the Gaza Strip with its inhumane policies. We demand the full lifting of the blockade and the permanent reopening of all crossings. Israel aims to harm the people of Gaza, including patients and workers, as much as it can, under any pretext it can find.
Tel Aviv's racist policy during Jewish holidays is considered by many as a grave violation of international laws and norms. Israel says that it will keep the crossings with Gaza sealed during Jewish holidays for security reasons. But human rights groups reject Tel Aviv's argument, asserting that such measures are only aimed at tightening the blockade. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Economic Divide.
African countries are rising up to the colonizer France. One by one, they're realizing that they were taken advantage of. But how did France do that? Well, one of the ways was through what's called the CFA franc, the monetary note, which is nothing short than a country being pillaged. Hi, I'm Kaveh Tahweh. Welcome to Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, some of the highlights, the CFA franc, the French way of controlling the monetary system in the countries being colonized, but it undermined democracy and the economy. However, it ensured French colonialism. Next, we take a look at France's agenda as another one of the highlights, in which African underdevelopment was one of the purposes of France vis-a-vis the respective countries. Also, forcing reliance on raw material exports, and another method was a monopoly on exports and imports, all to the advantage of France. And then the relationship between France and African leaders, complicit in choosing leaders, and also French and U.S. control was broken. How did that happen? You had the recent coups, which were a form of pushback. Africa is going through a political turmoil. Just weeks ago, Gabon witnessed a coup. It was the second former French colony in Africa to face a military coup in as many months, and the sixth in 3 years, following Mali, Chad, Guinea, Burkina Faso, and most recently, Niger. Anti-French sentiment is running high across those nations. That is due to France's dark colonial past and its neo-colonial footprints there. One of those elements is the CFA franc zone, created by France in 1945. The CFA franc was meant to control the cost of access to raw materials from the colonies and to shield France's corner from the other monetary bloc controlled by the UK, the sterling area. CFA franc remains, to this day, the currency in place in 14 African countries. Regardless of their independence from France decades ago, the currency is controlled by the French Treasury. In practice, African countries channel more money to France than they receive in aid and have no sovereignty over their monetary policies. The currency is referred to as a tool of monetary servitude, the invisible tool of France-Afrique, or, in plain terms, the colonial currency. The pact between France and its former colonies was designed to ensure the deliberate underdevelopment of African nations at the expense of France. It's time now for our media post for this program. First up, the pros and cons of the CFA franc zone. This article went on to say the main features of the franc zone are the fixed exchange rate, formerly with the French franc, now with the euro. It went on to say membership of the franc zone implies a sharing of sovereignty with France and with the other members of the monetary union. Next up, we took a look at this viewer comment on the matter, where said, by the name of Is It Real, said the $2 billion in assistance to Niger is actually a loan from the World Bank to be repaid with interest.
France knows how to twist the truth to make it sound like welfare. France helping fight terrorists is just an excuse to keep French troops on the ground in Niger to secure their corporate interests. It is not in their best interest to actually drive out the terrorists. All right, next we go to a website. It asks how France continues to dominate its former colonies in Africa. It said, in France's former African colonies, imperialist monetary policies from Paris continue to cripple domestic economies and undermine democracy. Then it said colonialism in Africa won't have meaningfully come to an end until true economic sovereignty is allowed to flourish. And finally, we go to another viewer comments by the name of Lee to Lee. It said, Niger is not a state in America or Europe. It is in Africa. The people are very poor, while the country is very rich in natural resources. There is no electricity. The uranium generates electricity in France and Europe for their industries and families. They don't care about Niger. Get rid of them, Niger. They are like parasites draining your body from blood. All the troops must get out of Niger now. Ouch, that's pretty harsh when it comes to the role that France plays in Niger. All right, it's time for our first Q&A. Let me introduce our guest. We have Dr. Charles Sinkala. He is a senior researcher in governance for Member of Parliament and also a presidential candidate in the 2021 Zambian elections. Dr. Sinkala, welcome to Economic Divide. So taking a look at the CFA franc and the role that that has played, and of course the way that France executed this monetary system. You have the banks from Africa that deposited the money into the French treasury, and of course that's a large portion of the foreign currency, which they couldn't even use as collateral, amongst other things. Can you tell us more about what some have described to be the violation of a country's sovereignty when it comes to France and its use of the CFA franc in Central or in Western and Central Africa?
Thank you very much. And I think we must understand the basic of the background of the Francophone countries. The 14 old countries were purchased in the what we call the Berlin Conference in 1884 and 1885. What we call the auction of Africa, where France purchased these territories, and they have owned the territories in terms of the central banks, and they own, whatever minerals or whatever that income comes from those countries.
All right, thank you for that. Let me introduce our next guest now. Kwame Gunza joins us. Kwame Gunza is a director of operations at Connect Africa. Kwame Gunza, welcome to Economic Divide. The relationship between France and these African countries is really incredible. I mean, I'm looking at, for example, how it also involved on purpose keeping these countries underdeveloped. I'd like to find out from you if that's the case. And that would be obviously to France's advantage. For example, forcing reliance on raw material exports, and also how the French monopolized things like shipping, exports, and imports. And this system of the CFA franc was designed by France to ensure that French colonialism actually prevailed. If that's true, then why did these countries allow this to happen?
Yeah, so there was a combination of tools that France has used. When these countries emerged from independence, a lot of them were impoverished. And you remember they created the Bretton Woods institutions. And the Bretton Woods institutions were presented as institutions which were coming to help the reconstruction of the poor countries that were emerging out of colonialism. They used a combination of tools to be able to put back these countries to the place of subjugation, and that is the IMF and World Bank. If you look at Africa in the 1970s, Africa had a share of global manufacturing of up to 7%.
Time now for the Info News section of the program. First up, we took a look at U.S. poverty that has been in the news recently. The reason being that it has jumped for the year 2022 based on the records that came out. And what's alarming is that child poverty more than doubled and that's the first increase in 13 years for that country. Some of the reasons, the expiration of pandemic programs, which are refundable tax credits and stimulus payments, were, I guess, a contributing factor in that case. Our take on that, the 2021 child tax credit expansion as part of President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan provided parents between $250 to $300 a month per child. Also in April 2023, the most recent month with available figures, 41.9 million people in 22.2 million households received SNAP benefits. SNAP is a program for people who can't, who don't have enough money for food, basically, and they need assistance with food. And that translates to 12.5% of the total U.S. population. Unbelievable. All right, next up, we go from the U.S. over to Europe and the Eurozone in particular, where we took a look at the economy there. Eurozone money supply has shrunk, and this, for the first time in 13 years, signals economic downturn for that zone. Europe as a whole is sliding into a recession as the August PMI numbers all turned negative. So the Eurozone is not doing well. Europe as a whole, in terms of its respective countries, also not showing good signs and economic indicators. Next up, we went to a meeting by the name of G20, not by the name, a group of G20 that held this meeting over in New Delhi in India. There was a joint statement that was issued and included climate financing, global debt, the reform of institutions like the World Bank, and also a new Green Development Pact. No action plan, however, on global debt, the cost of living crisis, including inflation and the world energy shortages. Obviously, we had to go in and put our analysis into this. The G20 started back in the year 1999 in the wake of the Asian financial crisis, meant as a forum for finance ministers and central bank governors to discuss global finance and economic issues. Now, fast forward to 2023, the global economy is besieged by soaring inflation, mounting debt, and is fueled by climate emergency. So we ask, what good is the G20 if they're the 20 top economies of the world and they're not solving problems that, in a sense, are repeating themselves year in and year out? All right, those were the news that we picked for every news section.
Economic Divide. This series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
In-depth section of the program. France's control of its colonies was not something that happened recently. It has been going on for quite some time, decades really, but its monetary control through the CFA franc showed the true colors of a colonizer. That is what we'll be looking at in this in-depth section. So let's get going. Well, it was the year 1800, in terms of the date where France forced an official exchange rate with the French currency. Paris sought to monopolize these circuits of production. Even French armed troops were sent to markets. They forced merchants to actually accept the French currency. And in turn, trade taxes were demanded in francs. So just one of the ways. Next, let's go and take a look at the countries that France had colonized. Obviously, we want to see what they were. It's broken up into West Africa and Central Africa. And some of the countries, Benin, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Chad, Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, Guinea-Bissau, we have the Ivory Coast, Mali, Niger, Senegal, Togo, and the Central African Republic. The count is 14 countries in all. And that happened during the date of 1930s, where those 14 countries came under the control of France in terms of colonizing it. Now, let's move on to the next one. Enforcing colonialism, how do they went about it? Well, in the 1930s onwards, France dominated the money supply. And these were some of the perks. For example, it used African labor, and then access to raw materials at sub-market prices. Those were just now a couple of examples. And then what it would do, France would actually sell the finished goods that it used in those two examples back to Africa at above-market prices. And this is what's called Francafrique there at the bottom. Yes, that's how France, as a colonizer, took advantage of Africa. Next up, let's go to the year 1945. You have the birth of the CFA franc. That's when that happened. It created those two currencies, the Central African CFA franc, and then that would be this banknote, for example, from Senegal. And then you had the other, which is the one from Congo. So these are the two different currencies that it actually created. In essence, it controlled the monetary sovereignty of 14 nations. These 14 nations made up nearly 200 million people. All right? Now, let's look at the way that they controlled these countries in terms of the money distribution. Now, member states deposited half of their exchange rate. It went to the French Treasury. These are the exchange reserves. Additionally, you had another 20% that was deposited for financial liabilities, as it's called. This meant that member state had access only to 30% of their money. So obviously that doesn't sound like a fair shake at all, especially when you have to deposit that much of your money and you don't have access to it. So that's another way that France exercised its CFA franc monopoly. When all that's said and done, France had a very cozy setup. It had 14 African countries set up to provide it with the raw materials, as we just covered, at rock-bottom prices. Manpower, low wages, to help it with its manufacturing. And then on top of all that, it had these countries deposit their money at a central bank, which then France turned around and generated revenues from that. You couldn't have a better setup than that. All right, let me now bring in Mahdi. He joins us to tell us what's coming up in his section. Mahdi, did we leave anything out from how France controlled its colonies?
Hi, Kaveh. There are many other ways that France is making money off its former colonies, and these methods are short of stealing money, like what France does with the CFA franc money in the French Treasury. I will cover that at length in the Quick Take section.
All right, thank you for that. We'll find out more from Mahdi, obviously, in his section. Now let me bring back our guest for our Q&A here. We have Dr. Charles Sincala rejoining us, economic and senior researcher in governance for a member of parliament. Dr. Sincala, welcome back to Economic Divide. So I'm looking at France and how it used its relationships with these countries, of its former colonies, that is. But in the aspect of the leaders that were chosen to be in power, there was obviously a relationship that benefited both. But we're looking at how there are coups that have happened recently, one after another. Gabon, Niger, the Ivory Coast also. Now, the French grip appears to have been broken. I mean, why do you think these countries are rising up at this particular time?
Yes, Cameroon, Burkina Faso, Somali, Cameroon, and Eritrea, most of those nations has been infested by coup d'etats. You know, what happens in the African continent, it's a short of money, the short of currency, the short of resources in terms of the currency that they have dominated, the United States of dollars. And, you know, governments are installed by those who have interest that the United States of America, France, Russia, they've got companies which have got the military complex where they contract their military mechanism. The part of the military budget, I think it is an average of $460 million budget to guarantee them that they won't be coup d'etats. But these are the ones who actually perpetrate and install presidents.
All right, thank you for that. Let me bring back now Kwame Gonza, Director of Operations at Connect Africa, who rejoins us. Kwame Gonza, welcome back to Economic Divide. It's very interesting how we're looking at the respective countries recently, such as Niger, such as now Gabon, and then we're looking also at the Ivory Coast, where the governments there, the people basically don't want it, and you have a transition taking place, whether it's to a military transitional government or otherwise. But people have realized that the resources of the countries is not working to their benefit. France obviously had a relationship with the heads of state, which benefited both, but not the people. Give us your take as to why we're looking at things happening at the rate they are at this juncture in time.
Yeah, so I think the financial success is dependent on whether the government represents the current which takes over after the one which represents the neo-colonial interests or the colonial interests represents the people. So that is where that kind of success will come from, a government which cares for the people. We have seen that in places like Burkina Faso, for example. We have seen that in Niger and Mali so far. In Gabon, we are not sure. So these coups are not the same in many cases. When colonialism was abolished, various territories remained divided. And so they remained vulnerable to that manipulation from outside. And this is what our forefathers were trying to fight against when they talked about unification, so that we can be able to.
Across the France-Afrique spectrum, France still today controls the currency, foreign reserves, the comprador elites, and trade businesses. France de facto controls the overwhelming majority of infrastructure in Francophone Africa. It is a virtual monopoly. Multiple French giants are operating in Africa, like the French conglomerate Bolloré's control of port and marine transport throughout West Africa. Then there's Bouygues Vinci, which dominates construction and public works, water and electricity distribution. Total has huge stakes in oil and gas. And then there's France's big banking, Société Générale, Crédit Lyonnais, BNP Paribas, to name a few. France has for decades made sure that there's very little intra-Africa trade. There have been attempts by African leaders to get rid of French control. Back in 2019, it was announced that the West African currency would be reformed and replaced by an independent currency to be called ECO. However, ECO would still be pegged to the euro and the burden that it implies.
Non ha un'identità culturale precisa, non ha...
Neo-colonialism is on the move. Look at what the UK and Germany have done in Africa. But let me tell you, France has to be held accountable the most for what's happening in some African countries. Europe must act now to give back to Africa a prominent role.
The project is, however, yet to materialize. The growing unpopularity of France in Africa and the younger generation's rejection of its presence are no accidents. There cannot be a French-American solution to Africa's challenges.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Mattia Possian. We want to take a look at the other ways France makes money off its former colonies. One of the ways is through the exchange rate from the CFA franc to the euros. Initially, the CFA franc was pegged to its French counterpart at a rate of 1.7 to 1, but in 1948 it was increased to 2 to 1 by overvaluing the CFA franc. Paris maintained its economic advantage while crushing Africa's export competitiveness. The transfer of the money to the French treasury is another way that the French government makes money off its colonies. Not only can they not use this money as collateral, sometimes they have to pay the French central bank just for keeping it there. We know that the CFA franc denominations are in euros, but when accounts are in credit, the African central banks effectively place their foreign exchange reserves at France's disposal. But when the central bank's accounts are in debit, they are obligated to pay interest to the French treasury. In other words, CFA member states pay France to hold on to their money. There is then the question of what France does with the money that is deposited in the French treasury. There are two very realistic things that France can do with that money: pay off a portion of its debt or invest that money at a profit. The total amount deposited by the CFA zone treasuries is around 15 billion euros. That's half of their foreign currency reserves, and it is refundable. With interest rates around 1%, they could produce about 150 million euros at most. There are speculations that this figure could be a lot more. According to this entry by a German newspaper, Africa pays 400 billion euros per year to France, which said the French government collects from its former colonies each year 440 billion euros of taxes. Finally, the exploitation of Africa by France wouldn't be complete if it didn't include two important sectors, natural resources and then the one not that well known, and that is West African ports. It is no secret how African countries are rich in natural resources like uranium, gold, and oil and gas. Niger provides around 20% of France's uranium needs. Meanwhile, Gabon is a source of crude oil. Mauritania delivers iron ore, while Togo and Benin provide agricultural commodities. And now comes the icing on the cake. French national Vince Boulevard owns most of West Africa's major ports. It is no surprise, then, that former French president Jacques Chirac had this to say about Africa. "We have to be honest and acknowledge that a big part of the money in our banks comes precisely from the exploitation of the African continent. Without Africa, France will slide down into the rank of a third world power." That brings us to the end of this quick take.
Mali, Niger, Gabon, Burkina Faso, the countries continue to topple the Western Aligned governments, opting for new rulers, which, after the transition period, well, they're going to elect a leader that's going to work for the people, hopefully, using the natural resources of their respective countries. Now, former French colonies have realized alignment with France did not bring them what they deserved. After all, they truly need to get beyond what means of livings they have now, at a minimum. We'll find out if that happens. That does it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much for tuning in to our program. If you have any questions, any comments, we truly appreciate it if you send it to us. From Ikobe Takwe and the entire team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
Ocean of Dua. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran. And we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil Brothers and sisters, we were discussing the third constituent in supplication, which is the constituent of God, the one whom we invoke, the one whom we call upon. And we said that observing sincerity is one of the most important things in this aspect, in this regard. And from this perspective, we said that sincerity is nothing other than recognizing the Almighty Allah as the absolute cause. When we discuss sincerity, another concept that comes to our minds is the concept of closeness, the kind of point of view that the true believer who is engaging in supplication must realize. And we said, based on the verses of the Holy Quran, we have different methods, different techniques using closeness, and we will look at them in details. In the first stage, the Almighty Allah invites the servants through this expression that he is someone else. He uses the third person pronoun in referring to himself, and he says to the servants, "Wad'uhu khawfan wa tama'a." Invite him and call upon him fearing and hoping. In the second stage, the Almighty Allah comes somehow closer, takes on a closer approach, asks the messengers to call out to the servants to let them know that the Almighty Allah is close whenever they call upon him. In the third stage, the Almighty Allah is so close that he says, نَحْنُ أَقْرَبُ إِلَيْهِ مِنْكُمْ وَلَكِنْ لَا تُبْصِرُونَ. We are closer to you, but you do not see. And in the fourth stage, the Quranic verse says, نَحْنُ أَقْرَبُ إِلَيْهِ مِنْ حَبْلِ الْوَرِيدِ. We are nearer to him than his life vein, than his jugular vein. And we should know that the only resort at the time of depression is Allah. This world is the world of change. And this world that we have come to recognize based on the creations of the Almighty Allah will change, and life will be interesting to us when we realize the relation between this world and the Almighty Allah. This supplicant who has realized this kind of closeness and relation will always be delighted as long as he is with his love, the Almighty Allah. And every moment, he adds something to his virtues. Only by being in this world and doing nothing else. Imam Ali alayhi salam was one of these people who had conquered this mount of knowledge, who had tasted the flavor of being close to his love.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the merciful God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good, about all the things that we went through, knowing that God speaks with us too, it's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. It is in
indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So up to now, dear listeners, we have counted different stages regarding the perspective of the Holy Quran towards closeness. We said that in the fourth stage, the Almighty Allah says that we are nearer to Him than His life vein, than His jugular vein. وَنَحْنُ أَقْرَبُ إِلَيْهِ مِنْ حَبْلِ الْوَرِيدِ. But in the fifth stage, a verse of the Holy Quran which is more interesting than the previous verses comes to being. This is the one whose comprehension is in the domain of the believer and the sincere Gnostics, who are really rare in the system of creation. In this sacred verse, we read, أَنَّ اللَّهَ يَحُولُ بَيْنَ الْمَرْءِ وَقَلْبِهِ. Allah intervenes between man and his heart. So, what does this mean? أَنَّ اللَّهَ يَحُولُ بَيْنَ الْمَرْءِ وَقَلْبِهِ. That Allah intervenes between man and his heart. This means man naturally, substantially belongs to Allah, and he is in direct relation with the great love. In this process of connection between man and the Almighty Allah, if a person could, by good luck, stay on the right path and delve deep inside himself, he will realize that he is a servant of God before becoming an independent being, and that he does not possess any prestige, any kind of identity, any kind of power, except being a servant to God the Almighty. At such a stage, he will find the necessity to submit to God, since he may not separate himself from the great love, he is proud to be permanently at God's presence. أَنَّ اللَّهَ يَحُولُ بَيْنَ الْمَرْءِ وَقَلْبِهِ. This person is the one who always stays in the close station to his loved one. He is not ready to lose such a status. This is such a great honor for him that he does not wish to let it go. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets, this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Thousands of ethnic Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh are crossing into Armenia following Azerbaijan's offensive last week that caused surrender of separatists there. Russia and Ukraine said their air defenses have downed missiles and drones as the war enters